It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Surgeon General declares loneliness and social isolation a public health crisis, like smoking daily. We explore the effects of loneliness and remedies for it. And you can be part of this discussion, calling in with a question, sharing your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Carmen Pangilinan is a public health strategist at the Wauwatosa Health Department and a member of the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness. Carmen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. And we have Andrew Schramm, directs inpatient trauma psychology services for Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. Andrew, welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Andrew, let's start with you. People are not likely to go to the emergency room or perhaps the doctor's office because they're lonely. How is loneliness manifesting itself with the patients that you see?
I would say that, you know, ask folks to imagine, you know, one person being in the hospital for some kind of illness. And, you know, when the nurse leaves, there's no one else in there. You know, the person's alone. Versus another person who has family and friends supporting them and looking after them in that experience. And so when folks are recovering from some kind of illness or injury and feel isolated, we know that they're at greater risk for things like depression, anxiety, and even worse, medical outcomes.
I just imagine, you know, a nurse leaving and all you hear are the medical devices and the beeping of the monitors, but the room itself is very still. Imagine what it would be like to be in that bed.
Yep.
The U.S. Surgeon General says lacking connection can raise the risk of premature death to levels comparable to smoking daily. Can you make the connection there? Why is loneliness so bad for a person's health?
So I think we are fundamentally social creatures. And if you think about the way that we evolved and survive, it is by having a tribe, you know, having loved ones and close ones around us. And so there's research that the feeling of loneliness actually registers in a similar way as physical pain. So it's that fundamental of a human need. And when that is lacking, people tend not to fare well.
Carmen, you have worked with older adults for many years. How do you see loneliness affecting elderly people?
Yeah. So before I worked in public health, I was a social worker working with older adults for many years. And so many times I would be working with older adults and they had, you know, real needs for resources and services. But what I noticed was in many, if they didn't have a lot of family support or friend support, they really enjoyed that conversation and didn't want it to end. And it always made me feel bad to have to leave, but you could tell that they had this thirst to connect. They really wanted someone to just hear them out, to talk to them. So it's something that I noticed in my practice for many years. And now working in public health, now we're looking at it in, you know, in how it affects communities and how it affects our entire nation.
But this is not just a situation involving elderly people. It can affect, you know, people in all at all ages, all walks of life. Is that true?
Absolutely. We really noticed that here in Wauwatosa. 2 years ago, we conducted our community health assessment and we surveyed the community and some of the questions related to how connected they felt to others, to their schools. And what we noticed was that 20% of our older adult residents reported feeling a lack of companionship. And that same amount, 20% of middle school students, I'm sorry, actually it was 30%, it was even higher, 30% of middle school students did not feel a sense of belonging at school. And when we were conducting our community conversations, we just kept hearing it from everybody, different groups, all ages, that they weren't feeling that connection that they really wanted to have with others.
Carmen Pangolinan is a public health strategist with the Wauwatosa Health Department. We have Andrew Schramm as well from the Medical College of Wisconsin. As we talk about loneliness and look at remedies and solutions along the way, you can join in with your questions and comments about social isolation. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew, this year, the U.S. Surgeon General issued this report estimating roughly half of American adults experience measurable levels of loneliness. How do mental health professionals define loneliness?
That's a really good question. I think in some ways, I think thinking about the opposite is helpful. So, you know, when someone is not lonely, they have a sense of social connectedness and support, and that if they needed someone, there was someone they could call, or to celebrate, you know, life's moments, there are people around them. And so really the absence of that social support is the way that I personally think about loneliness.
Carmen, you're a member of the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness. What aspects of loneliness is the coalition focused on?
Yeah, well, our group is working together. We have four different work groups that are kind of taking a look at this issue from a different lens. So we've got an access and detection group, and they're trying to look at methods for how to identify loneliness and how to provide access to meaningful resources and services. There's a group that is really working on raising awareness, kind of like what we're talking about today, that this isn't just a feeling, this is an actual crisis, this is an epidemic, and letting people know about the health effects. There's a group that works on measurement, looking at sort of the research to try to expand that knowledge base so we can figure out what types of activities and interventions actually do work. And then there's a policy and advocacy group, which is the group that I'm in. And we're trying to look at public policy solutions that get at the root causes of what is causing this epidemic, and what are some things that we can do policy-wise to support programs and interventions that will help alleviate some of this problem.
So you're really looking at a much broader issue and connecting it to what types of policy actions could we have here. What has come up from the group? What are some things that are being proposed?
Well, what we've noticed is that this issue, it intersects so much with all these different issues that people are facing, like let's say transportation. So we've always known that transportation is a difficult thing for older adults. A lot of times when people aren't able to drive anymore, depending on where you live, you may not have access to a lot of transportation. Well, that, of course, is going to create a situation where you're not able to connect with those that you want to be with because you're stuck. You don't have transportation. So that's one huge area. Broadband access is another. We identify that there's this digital divide. It really came to light during COVID that, unfortunately, people who aren't as savvy with technology or as, you know, comfortable maybe using the technology, they didn't have the opportunity to connect on Zoom. They couldn't do a telehealth appointment. So that was leaving people behind. So we're looking at trying to, you know, expand that as greatly as possible. Volunteer work is another area that we've looked at. We know that volunteering as you, the volunteer, it makes you feel good. It's good for your health. And then you're helping somebody along. But there are sometimes policies out there that make it hard for people. For instance, a reimbursement for travel for people who provide rides. Sometimes people either don't get reimbursed, or depending on the type of insurance they have, they can't get reimbursed to volunteer. So there are things out there that disincentivize people to volunteer. So we want to work on making it easier for people to do the things that will help connect them with others.
Andrew, are there interventions in the hospital setting when a patient isn't surrounded by any type of support network? Are there things that you can do in the hospital setting to combat loneliness?
Yeah, we have a great social work team that has one of their many focuses, I think, is looking at our patients' social worlds and trying to promote that connection with others. And so, as a psychologist working with our patients, I find sometimes that engaging in some problem solving can be helpful. A lot of times, I hear from patients that they, wouldn't want to bother their neighbor to ask them to visit them because they know how busy their neighbor is. But, asking someone, well, if your neighbor was in the hospital, would you want them to let you know? So it kind of, we tend, I think, not to want to bother others. And I think sometimes we can get in the way of social connection ourselves in some ways.
Andrew Schramm is a psychologist and assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Carmen Pangolinan is a member of the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your experiences along the way. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the health effects of loneliness as federal authorities estimate about half of American adults experience levels of loneliness. You can be part of this conversation. Call in with a question. Add your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Carmen Pangolinan is a public health strategist at the Wauwatosa Health Department, and Andrew Schramm is with us, overseas psychology services at the Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. Andrew, there was a newspaper column in Connecticut, a retired teacher pushing against the U.S. Surgeon General's warnings on loneliness, and the teacher says, "My pandemic loneliness helped me feel the satisfaction of being human." Can loneliness sometimes have benefits?
That's interesting. I guess I would point out maybe the distinction between solitude and loneliness. In my view, and I'm a pretty strong introvert here saying this. So in my view, there can be beauty in being alone and people, I think, can enjoy solitude. Perhaps some of the changes with the pandemic have facilitated that for people in some ways. For me, loneliness is a bit different from solitude in that it's kind of a more melancholic aloneness, where perhaps if someone, me as an introvert, did want to engage with someone, that I felt that there was no one around me, or that there was no one who cared. And so that was one distinction I would make regarding that.
Carmen, how do you view solitude and loneliness, and how did the pandemic conditions enlighten your work on this issue?
Well, I would have to agree. There's a big difference between solitude and loneliness. And I'm a big extrovert here. But I sometimes really do also enjoy that time alone. I think everyone needs a little time to be with your thoughts and reflect on life. But I think that difference, like we just talked about, is when you're in that solitude, you're there because you want to be, and you're happy about it. You're feeling good about it. But when you're actually feeling real loneliness, you want things to be different. You want to have more deeper connection. And it's just, for whatever reason, multitude of reasons, it's not possible. The pandemic really, I think, brought this issue to light. This is something that has been a problem for a long time. Like I mentioned, I noticed it all the time in my social work practice. And it just didn't get a lot of attention. But I think if there's anything good that can come out of a pandemic, maybe this is one of those things, is that this is a problem. It needs to be addressed. And it's not just a problem of oh, someone feels bad because they don't have a lot of friends. It's way more serious than that. You know, the implications are deep for on the individual level, on the community level. There's just a lot of awareness that needs to happen around this issue.
It seems like this U.S. Surgeon General has made a concerted effort in this area. Do you think that has made this a more serious issue with those warnings?
Absolutely. I was really happy to see the Surgeon General's advisory come out. I think in terms of our work in public health, it really helps to be able to refer back to that report and say, you know, this isn't just our community that's feeling this way. Look at this is a national problem. So we're really grateful that this report is out. And I also really appreciate that it outlines that strategy to how can we move things forward. So part of the challenge with this issue that there's just not a large evidence base out there about what works to create social connection. So having this report really helps us move in that direction.
That is Carmen Pangolinan, who is a member of the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness. Andrew Schramm is with us, psychologist with Medical College of Wisconsin. You can join the discussion at any point, 800-642-1234. Call in with a question. You can share your comments, email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew, the Washington Post reports that research shows people who eat meals with others tend to consume more calories and have better health outcomes. Can social dining play a role in health?
That's such an interesting finding. I was fortunate just recently to go to Barcelona for a conference, and the culture there around just sitting around a table for hours, you know, in the evening and breaking bread over time and sharing stories comes to mind for me as a recent experience of a culture that really, I think, embraces eating and food as a way of connecting with others. I think that when one thinks about times maybe that are memorable that they've had with other people, a lot of times meals or sharing food comes to mind for that. So that's a very interesting finding.
Eating and connecting over a table. Carmen, you've also helped to develop programming in Wauwatosa to address social isolation. What have you tried?
Yeah, well, we've just gotten started. So we're actually Wauwatosa is an AARP designated age-friendly community. And as part of that designation, our commitment to making our community more friendly for people of all ages is we have created an action plan. And then and within that, we started to look at what could we do to bring people together. So one of the first things that we've started, it's called TOSA Tech Time. And it's an intergenerational program where we have high school students come to the library, and we have then older adults come with their tablet or their cell phone, and they just sit down and ask all the questions that they have. And these kids are amazing, and they can answer their questions immediately. But it's just amazing to see beyond just the practical help that they're giving them. We're seeing this bond develop. They're taking pictures together. One was said, "You can call me anytime for help." And it's just this wonderful connection between these generations. So we just got that started, and we're really excited about it. But some other things, we hosted an age-friendly ice cream social. We hosted a decades dinner where we asked people from each decade of life, from the 20s through we got up into the 80s, to come together over a meal, kind of what we were just talking about. And we just talked, and we found all these commonalities. You know, we were all these people of different ages, but it was just so wonderful to come together. So we're hoping to do more of that, bringing people together, hopefully over a meal, having more community conversations. It's just, we're really excited. We're just at the beginning of this, but we're very excited about this work.
Did you have questions or prompts at the Decades Dinner?
We did. We first started with something that I thought would be sort of a commonality, and it was, what's the favorite place you've ever traveled to?
Yeah.
And it was a great icebreaker because it got everyone to realize that we may be all coming from different places, but we have common experiences of liking to travel, no matter where it was. We had good stories to tell, and it really kind of broke that ice. And then we started talking about what it meant to, to age in this society and what that meant personally. And but it was just a really wonderful time.
Carmen Pangilinan, who works in public health at the Wauwatosa Health Department. Andrew Schramm, clinical psychologist with the Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts on loneliness and social isolation. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Tony Evers proclaims an awareness week for reducing social isolation and loneliness in Wisconsin communities. We examine the connection between loneliness and health. And you can call in with the question, share your perspectives, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Schramm directs inpatient trauma psychology services at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. And Carmen Pangilinan is a member of the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness. Let's take a call now. Elsbeth in Mequon. Hi, Elsbeth. What would you like to bring up?
Yes, good morning. Somewhat in the spirit of the teacher who said she was embracing solitude, I have lived alone for a very, very long time, and always my job involved me being surrounded by warm bodies, young and old, who needed my help. And I was never, never lonely. But when it came time for me to be retired, I embraced the solitude, and it was never loneliness. I have no television set and no computer, and I surrounded myself with music, beautiful music that was comforting. And I'm a kind of person who thinks almost everything has a sort of spirit to it. So I had plants and music and books. And I want to emphasize the warmth of a tone of human voice, part of why we listen to NPR, but also looking at your screen. Yes, you can get information, but you don't get a human voice. And we can learn from other cultures about gathering around meals. I see people in restaurants, families who sit down, order, and take out their screens. They forgot how to have a conversation. They are getting communication, of course, through the screen, but they don't have the human voice. So it's small things that can really make being alone pleasant. And this is not to diminish the trauma that comes from real loneliness.
Oh, wow. Elsbeth, I want to jump in here and thank you so much for sharing your story and what comes up for you in this conversation. Andrew, looking at a screen, and we know about the heavy use of social media through all the studies that come out that can, you know, lead to people feeling socially isolated. What comes up for you in Elsbeth's story?
I think one thing that comes up as I hear Elsbeth's story is just the many ways that we can enrich our lives that perhaps aren't dependent on other humans. And so I think in the conversation about loneliness, it's great to acknowledge that piece. I think that a lot of times technology has kind of given us the illusion of connectedness. We with social media have a kind of a curated image that we can display to others that might not really promote a deep sense of connection. Regarding screens, I think that there's a lot of utility in trying to be present with others. And I had a dinner with friends where we left our phone, you know, on the kitchen counter and really tried to be intentional about connecting with others.
How did that
so
go?
I think being present, it was fantastic. Yeah, it was wonderful. And there's some research actually that the having a phone out, you know, if you're getting coffee or having a meal, actually decreases self-disclosure. And so the presence of that technology, even if someone's not looking at it, has been shown to reduce the depth of our conversations and connections.
Wow. Carmen, what would you like to say about the digital presence in our lives?
Yeah, this one, it's tricky, you know, because there are definitely pros and cons. And I think
TOSA Tech Time, pro.
Yes, exactly. Right. So, you know, there's things that we can do to connect in a digital way that we couldn't do a long time ago. You know, I think about myself where one of my sets of grandparents was in the Philippines, and I only got to meet my grandpa one time because back then you couldn't FaceTime each other. You couldn't see each other that way. We would write each other letters and it would take a month to deliver. And things have changed so much. So, you know, in that sense, I think that's amazing that people can connect who are so far away. So for older adults whose children live far away, and they, you know, seeing their children, seeing their grandchildren, so many good things can come out of it. But then there's a lot of the bad things too. So we kind of have to weigh those things. One other thing from Elsbeth's call that I thought was really important is, you know, she noted that some of these small things can make a difference. And what we've noticed in some of this research is that it truly can just be a small thing in someone's day. If you're kind to someone in line behind you at the grocery store, that can truly make someone's day. So it's not something that has to be this huge effort on our parts. If we're just kind to each other, make small talk with each other, chit chat once in a while. If someone's lonely, just feeling a little bit of attention from somebody else can truly help them have a better day. So just something to keep in mind.
Wow. These smaller interactions in life, as we go through life, they can really add up and they can make people feel less isolated. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I read articles about how just in interaction in daily life, and it kind of applies to the workplace too. We've noticed that in the workplace, people sometimes feel lonely and isolated. And if you can have at least one relationship in your workplace where you feel that you actually have someone that you can talk to, it helps inspire, you know, better job satisfaction, creativity, better job performance. So just it really a little bit can go a long way.
Carmen Pangolinan is a member of the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness, a public health strategist in Wauwatosa. We have Andrew Schramm with us, psychologist with Medical College of Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions, your experiences, comments as well, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew, research shows making friends can be harder for adults. And I'm thinking of you and your friends putting away your devices before sitting down for a meal. But why is forming friendships harder when people are older?
That's such a great question. And one of the Surgeon General's reports findings was, you know, about young adults and how loneliness especially impacts them. I think that as an adult, it can be hard to make new friends. For me, you know, in school, growing up and in college, there were these kind of opportunities that came about naturally to connect with others, like in classes or clubs or the dorms or so on. And I think that after that, as a young adult, that I've found it. Well, I'm not a young adult. I think I'm creeping out of that as a 36-year-old. But I think that we have to search and be more intentional for connections. So doing things like I recently joined a recreational sports league, or maybe using social media to see that someone's had this great life event. You know, let's catch up and get coffee. Really trying to be intentional about making those connections, I think, is important.
Making time for them as well. And it requires time and effort. And that can be difficult, especially in a time of life when there is a lot of other things going on and there's work and there's family. You have to make it a priority.
Absolutely. And I think with research like this, my thinking has changed a bit about that in terms of really viewing these social relationships and social connections as an investment in our happiness and that of others. So I definitely agree that, you know, it takes intentionality and creating time for it.
I keep thinking, Carmen, about your survey finding 30% of middle schoolers not feeling connection, and wondering, you know, they're surrounded by peers all day. What could be going on? What about making friends and finding connection at younger ages?
Yeah, you know, it is interesting, and it made me really sad to see that 30% feeling that way. I think we have recognized here in the health department that these kids have come through a very difficult time. We were fortunate that we got some funding from the American Rescue Plan Act, that we have two social workers who are now working in our elementary and middle schools. And they're trying to create groups where they, you know, they bring the kids together, have them talking to one another more. They plan some events for the kids. So I think middle school is kind of a hard time for everybody all the time, but especially these last few years have been really, really tough. So, you know, I don't know that we know exactly why people are feeling that way, but I think we have a sense for the challenges that they've been going through.
Let's bring in Patrick in Madison. Patrick, hi. What would you like to share?
Hi, good morning. Regarding the extroversion, introversion discussion, I want to comment on that. The fellow in your studio that said some words about it, and he said, you know, I want to have solitude, and it was a great distinction, solitude versus loneliness. But for introverts, introverts need solitude, and extroverts need other people. And it has to do with our energy level, and it's physiological. So I don't know if it relates. I can't remember from the book I read, which changed my life, and I think many introverts and extroverts' lives, called The Introvert Advantage. I don't recall the author, but that title should be pretty copyrighted. go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to bring Andrew into the conversation for a response. What comes up here from Patrick?
Yeah, Patrick, great issue you've raised here. I think that it's one thing that your comment is bringing up for me is that I think it's important that we make space for people to develop social connections in whatever way that feels fulfilling for them. And so going to a neighborhood block party, you know, might really be give someone a sense of connection. It might not be for someone else a way that they prefer to connect with others. And so I definitely agree that you know, in our culture, we tend to maybe be prescriptive with this and not recognize the diversity in terms of people's introversion or extroversion. So I really appreciate that point.
And Carmen, with your extroverted tendencies, how do you find fulfilling social connections?
Oh, well, for me, I think it's kind of what we've just been talking about. I do kind of get energy from being around other people. It makes me feel happy to meet new people. But having said that, it is still important to me to have a little bit of time on my own. And I think in general, what this points to is that this issue is the reason it's so complex is because there's no like one thing that we can do to make it better for everybody. It's so individualized. It's so, you know, what might make me happy and feel connected may be way too much for somebody else. So this is part of the challenge. And there is some research being done actually on social prescribing. There are some researchers out at the University of California, San Francisco that are looking at working with their patients and literally having a conversation about what would make you feel more connected, what would make you happy. And then they write a prescription, like go have lunch with your granddaughter. That's how individualized this can be.
Carmen Pangolinan, a public health strategist at Wauwatosa's Health Department. Andrew Schramm, psychologist at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And you can be part of this conversation about loneliness and social isolation. Call in with your question, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More Americans are experiencing loneliness, according to a U.S. Surgeon General advisory. What do you want to know or share about social isolation? Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew Schramm directs inpatient trauma psychology for Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. And Carmen Pangolinan is on the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness. Carmen, Governor Tony Evers declared the week of November 12th Social Isolation and Loneliness Week. How will state officials be drawing attention to this issue during that week?
Yeah, that's right. We're really grateful that the governor has created a proclamation and creating more awareness around this. So our coalition is going to be doing quite a few things. We're hosting three webinars during that week. One is a panel discussion with people talking about their own lived experience. I think it's a panel of people who have disabilities and older adults. And then another one, we're going to actually talk more in depth about the Surgeon General's advisory. And then another one, we're going to talk about how we can improve connectedness in homebound individuals. So that's an educational piece that we're doing. We're also going to have a social media campaign out there. Our theme is it's make your random act of kindness a random act of connection. So kind of putting that into the world that it's just a little thing that you do for someone, like we talked about before, can really make a difference. So if you're going to do something nice for someone, try to make it something where you're connecting with another. So that's some of the stuff that we have planned for that week.
Something we really haven't touched on is homebound individuals. This particular group of people, as you mentioned, transportation, you know, that can be a barrier. But for people who can't leave their home, what can they do to find connection if there aren't people coming to visit them?
Yeah, this can be really, really challenging. There are some programs out there. They have some friendly caller programs where volunteers will make a phone call each day and then they have a chance to chat with somebody. One thing we're doing here in Wauwatosa, we have identified all the folks who get a home-delivered meal. So those would be, by definition, people that are homebound. And we're going to be sending out information to them just about things happening in the city, ways they can connect. But it is a challenge. It's a really tough thing to do.
Let's bring in Janet in Burlington. Janet, hi.
Hi, good morning. The comment I have to make is it doesn't necessarily apply to people who are homebound, but for people who can get up and out, I found that volunteering is really important. I'm a people person. When I retired from a very busy job, I found I had a lot of time on my hands. I needed to be around people, and that's exactly what I do with my volunteer work, both through various blood drives and through our local hospital.
So you're volunteering in a healthcare capacity at blood drives at your local hospital. How did you decide? Yes. How did you decide where to volunteer?
I'm a retired hospital administrator, so being in a medical setting was comfortable for me.
Ah, okay. Janet, thank you so much for sharing that. Andrew, you know, being in a comfortable setting, a medical setting, was where Janet found she could find that social connection in retirement. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, one of the things that Janet's comment highlights, I think, is that perhaps all social connection is not equal in the sense that when we can connect with others in doing something that is meaningful or that concerns our shared values, that can add a layer of meaning to the interaction. So I think it's a great point.
Carmen, what is your long-term plan with the coalition and its hopes for developing for communities to address loneliness? Where do you see the vision going?
Yeah, well, I think as our four work groups progress, we each have different projects that we're working on. I know with our policy and advocacy group, what we're doing right now is we're writing a white paper that really explains the scope of the issue and talks about some of those policy solutions that we see. And we're going to be sharing that with the legislature when that's ready. And I know some of the other groups, like the Raising Awareness group, they're the ones who really have created all of the events that are coming up around the Awareness Week. So they created the webinars, they're doing the social media campaign. So I think in general, we want to work to find if there are evidence-based programs or interventions that work, and then try to get those to be disseminated throughout communities. So it's we're working statewide, but we really, our goal is to reach more individual communities so that they can take some of this information and use it in a way that works for their community.
In our final moments together, Andrew, I want to acknowledge this time of year and, you know, any suggestion for handling loneliness during the holiday season that is so often filled with messages of togetherness.
Yeah, I think one thing I want to really highlight is that this is a loneliness is in some ways complicated. But on the other hand, we are not helpless in this. And each of us can do things such as reaching out to a neighbor that you haven't seen in a while. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has some great resources on a campaign called Seize the Awkward. And the idea that at times it might feel a little bit awkward to start a conversation, but that doing so is really important. And so I think especially around the holidays when so many of the traditions and so on are related to social connection, that really we each can play a part in reducing others' loneliness.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Andrew Schramm directs inpatient trauma psychology services for Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. Carmen Pangalina is a public health strategist with Wauwatosa Health Department and a member of the Wisconsin Coalition to End Social Isolation and Loneliness. For disclosure, Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin are business sponsors of WPR. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.